that they're beautiful Lakota people. And that is something worth fighting for.
Indian from all directions, surround the world of them in the Grand Canyon. Nepers, Cherokee and Cheyenne, cats are outlaw raiders and bounty killer gang.
From Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to Non-Commercial Community Radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4. Now through April, you'll hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our fantastic programmers, including specials for Black History Month and International Women's Day. If you'd like to check out our specials, go to kboo.fm/ATN.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Hold up. Whoop, whoop.
Yo, this is M1 from Dead Press.
Hey, what's up? This is Boots from the Coup.
On the move, this is Pam Africa.
Yo, check this out. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise.
I'm Eddie Zane.
And I'm Helen Zia.
And we're on Hard Knock Radio.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Over the past few weeks, many of us have seen disturbing images of people being led by masked, officials of the law. Their heads have been shaven. They're made to face down, kneel down. It looks like some sort of prison camp. And initially, people thought, is that happening here in America? And then they got wind. It's like, no, people have been picked up off the streets here in the United States, put on a plane, and sent to El Salvador. And for many of us who've been following some of the actions in El Salvador, this is nothing new. This has been going on for a little bit. And when it was first happening, people paid no attention. It's like, not my country. I don't live there. Ain't my problem. And now they're realizing, like, wait a second. Folks who have green cards, folks who are accused of being associated with gangs, people who are quote-unquote American citizens are being sent to El Salvador. And now we need to pay attention. Now everybody wants to find out what's going on. Our guest has been talking about this for a very long time. He's a peacemaker. He's the co-founder of Homies Unidos down in Los Angeles. We've had him on the show many a times, and we were just talking off the air, about the capitulation that we're seeing for many people who hold levers of power, which means that for those of us listening, we're kind of on our own right now. So Alex Sanchez is our guest. Known around the world, definitely around the States, for his work. In many ways, this is not new to you, seeing what's going on in El Salvador. This is kind of you know, this is kind of par for the course. But for now, us in the United States to see this, now everybody's waking up, and I'm sure your phone has been ringing. Like, can you talk to us about this? And this is something you've been saying has been going on for a while, but let's give a little bit of El Salvador 101, what's happening with these prison camps and how are we now connected with it in the way that we are.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, we can go back as far as, I think, 1996, when the first impact of Homegrown Terrorist Act happened in Oklahoma, in which the response was, you know, we need safer borders and we need to arrest, you know, individuals that are criminals, right, that might have some links to terrorism. And they we had the Anti-Terrorist Act law that came in, and then the AIRA law that act that came in also, that targeted through immigration, targeting individuals that had been somewhat linked to terrorism for fast deportation, no matter if they had a green card, they were legally here. As long as you had committed some type of offense, you were deportable. But ultimately, it was used against the immigrant community. It was used against mass deportation. So one of the biggest issues that happened was that you have the first wave of folks that were being deported that have been criminalized, right? And we have been speaking on the issue of this intersection between the criminal justice movement and the immigration reform movement, right? And this intersection was where they both met, right? And it's when you've been criminalized and then when you're placed into another prison system, which is the immigration detention system, right? And now, because of the consequence of being criminalized, now you're being deported, right? And it's interlinked. It's really interlinked, but people just couldn't meet in the center, right? Folks that on the criminal justice movement said, no, we don't do immigration issue, right? Folks in the immigration movement said, oh, no, we don't do criminal issue. We want to legalize all these 12 million people here that are clean cut, good immigrants. Why are we going to invest in focusing on the issue of those that have been criminalized and so on? Then we have, you know, what happened after 9/11.
Well, let's stop for a second. You mentioned 1995 Oklahoma, and I don't want it to go over people's heads, especially there's a lot of people listening born after 1995. We're talking about Timothy McVeigh, right?
Correct. Yes.
And so this is a white guy that blows up the federal buildings in Oklahoma, but the response was to put a terrorist bill in place and then move away from homegrown terrorists like Timothy McVeigh, the militias and people like that. And they said, well, this is the excuse and the tool that we need. Let's go after El Salvadorians, Mexicans, and anybody else who they felt it can be classified as the other, you know, and use that as a weapon. So they weren't investigating militias. They started investigating people like yourselves.
Most definitely. And just to be clear, you know, this wasn't a Latino issue. You know, you had people from Haiti, Jamaica, Cambodia, Laos, right? Nam, right? All those places also, that the folks that were not U.S. citizens were being targeted, right?
Right.
But, you know, the face of that deportation was Latino. And on top of that was Mexican, right? So everybody felt like, you're Mexican. And I'm like, I'm Salvadoran, man, right? But at the same time, you know, there was movements that came up trying to stop those laws, but they failed.
I was going to ask you about the pushback. Those movements would have been on the ground organizations like yourselves, you know, homies and others that would have been trying to fight this, right? Or the equivalent of homies. I think you all came a little bit afterwards. Yeah. Right, but I didn't see, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, I didn't see a full court press from the Democrats. So that time, that would have been Bill Clinton. You know, that would have been we had a couple of years of Bush. Obama seemed to rev it up even more, you know. But I remember doing shows And I'm glad that you talked about the fact that everybody was swept up, because we had a number of people on the shows who were retroactively being deported. So they were coming after, for example, a lot of Southeast Asians, Cambodians in particular. And they're like, hey, man, I know you're 30 years old, but when you was 15, you was joyriding in a car, and now we're going to deport you as a result. And I think one of the more famous cases that was finally decided in court was the case of Eddie Zane, who is no stranger to our airwaves. They tried to do that with him, and he was able to beat it. But they were retroactively deporting people. And I bring this up because while we're seeing what's going on, and it's horrific, there was a precedent already set damn near 25, 30 years ago where this was happening, but we ignored it because it wasn't us. Am I correct in that? In my timeline on that?
I mean, you hit it right on the nail, because, you know, obviously, I believe the criminal justice system totally, it went through their heads, right? The criminal justice movement, per se, didn't really see the 96 law that happened as a criminal justice issue. It's an immigration issue, right? So that's why it wasn't front and center, right? On, you know, bringing in other groups except mostly Latino and Asian folks, right? So you bring another really good point that Eddie Zane actually was deported initially, you know, but like several countries like Cuba, Venezuela, and China do not accept their deportees.
Right.
The country of origin needs to accept you, give you a temporary visa for you to travel down to your country. And that's exactly what we've seen with the Venezuelans going down to El Salvador, right? Just to come forward a little bit. But just to bring another phase, another historical moment was the basically 9/11, right? Then you have, you know, community shield that happened with George Bush, right? Community Shield was also a response, but the fear of immigrants and portraying immigrants as criminals. And that law basically was to round up anybody that was here undocumented, that had some type of criminal record. So what it did, it enhanced the 96 law, right, that individuals really that were here that were impacted retroactively by the 96 law, you know, were still living around, you know, doing their business. As long as they don't go out of the country and come back with their green cards, they were fine, because they'll check them at the
border.
And, you know, and they'll realize that they have a conviction, right? But what happened was that now you have a unit specialized to go hunt down individuals that still haven't gotten arrested. And that's when they started bringing in the issues of gang members, right, and so on. So, you know, it was called Community Shield. They rounded up a lot of folks, especially those that were Central Americans, and fast-tracked deportation, right? You ended up having that really impact those countries, mostly of Central America and Mexico, you know, by a flow of hundreds, if not thousands a year, people that have been deported that didn't have a transition back home, that were not allowed to take their stuff, they were not allowed to take their family, they were not allowed even to get their money down there. You had to go through a whole process to even, you had a bank account, right?
Right.
And you lose that money. So no infrastructure in our countries of origin, right, created, right, the perfect storm for all the children that were left behind after the conflict of Central America, that were basically homeless, living in the street, living off of whatever you give them, who used glue as a main drug of choice because it was cheap. Right, sniffing glue, you will see these kids around the area in bus stops and being treated like animals and killed. Nobody gave a damn about the children that have been the direct result of this 12-year civil war in El Salvador, and then the 26-year war of Guatemala, right? these children seen this new attitude of gangs and made in the United States gave them a sense of, like, I want to be like that. I want to be feared like that, right? And that's how they were attracted to the gang lifestyle, right? Right. They didn't have a choice. They didn't have a life. And that's how, and the gang members that were being deported out there felt, you know, like, how do I protect myself? Well, they got all these kids. So it was like a mutual kind of marriage that happened between those kids that were homegrown over there and these deportees that were going out there for survival purposes. And that's how you saw the expansion of the gangs.
A couple of things, Alex. One, the face of immigration has been a brown face. But as you point out, you know, and I often tell people, you go back east, it ain't a brown face, it's mostly black, you know. And even in places like Texas, when you go on the border, you start to see Haitians and everybody else. That seems very intentional. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I feel like as long as the face is brown, two things come up. One, people go, oh, these are quote unquote foreigners, and that's not my issue. And it conjures up a whole set of other things, you know, like they're overtaking the country, yada, yada, yada. And then two, what should be alarming and should form maybe very strong alliances doesn't, because again, you have folks that may understand, again, immigration from a brown perspective and not realize, no, they're Jamaicans and everybody else. So, you know, black folks, for example, may not be as involved or may actually vote against immigration policies because they don't see it connected. So that's one thing. The other thing you started to touch upon, so these are two separate questions, but El Salvador has a very long history, and I'm glad you pointed out that the gang influence comes from here and not the other way around. Like, they're looking at the United States and what's grown here and saying, let me mimic this, and then we're exporting that versus the other way around. Because I think in many people's minds, they're going, oh, this gang stuff, you know, MS-13 and 18th Street and all that, the cartels, they're all coming from these other countries. And it's like, no, these things were exported. They looked at mafia and organized crime syndicates, said, I want to be like that. And these are the things that became part of pop culture and were put out there without a context. So people start to see this, at least my experience has been, to see these things and think like, oh, this is the norm, you know, in the United States, wearing colors and handkerchiefs and carrying guns and acting crazy. That's how they do it there. That's how we're supposed to do it. So two separate things, but, you know, El Salvador's history is a long and sordid one, which, you know, to conclude, American policy is what brought all this on. And now we're blaming El Salvadorians for something that we created and then gaslit everybody to think it came the other way around.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, it's always been folks talking heads about, you know, gang stuff, trying to say that this was something that immigrants are bringing into the country and putting all these citizens in danger, right? Which is the rhetoric being used. But they were also using this rhetoric with the Haitians, right?
Yep.
You know, go too far, you know, how they were talking about, you know, eating animals and stuff like this, right? I mean, it's ridiculous.
But all the way back to the 80s, when they wouldn't let them in, they were saying these are gang-infested populations.
Exactly. So, or they were left-wingers, like, from the government that were socialists or communists, bringing the communism into the country, right? One of the things. But yeah, I think that one of the biggest issues has been, you know, I think on the immigration reform movement, the lack of interaction with the African American, especially here in Los Angeles, around the issues of immigration. Right? There's always been solidarity, you know, but we've seen sometimes there's more solidarity with the folks from the west side of LA, you know. Other folks that were in solidarity with the movements of Central America as well, you know, but most of those folks were you know, Caucasian. They were white, you know, and so we definitely need to put in more work. And that's been one of my biggest missions, is to really interlink these issues, right, of the important things of, you know, what happened with Black Lives Matter, you know, and what's going on with our Latinos now. You know, I think the African-American community have been more organized around their issues. You know, Latinos, you know, we're more divided than you would think. You know, I that, and you saw this in this election. You know, many Latinos are really conservative. They don't like to get involved in politics because of the historical repression in our countries, right? Mm. So you don't have that many Latino going out there really voicing their concerns and their voice in activism because of that, right? But there is a large population of folks here in Los Angeles that really organize and throughout California, right? So we definitely need, you know, the support. There's a rumor going around, right, that for March 5th there's going to be a worldwide protest, right, against what's happening around the world, what's happening in the United States. All issues are going to be put in one pot. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, this rumor is that the African American community is not going to participate in it, right? So that moment, right, it's where, you know, you have folks like start to question what's going on. Why aren't they supporting us if we supported them? And that's how they divide us, and that's how they conquer us, right? When the stuff of actions, you know, they start putting information out there that is not correct, right?
Right. And but, that showing up on social media, and certain things are being artificially amplified. You know, the famous thing is seeing the sisters with the coffee cup saying, "I'm not getting involved." Uh-huh. Which to me is like, first of all, to believe that 52% of a community voted for this election is a falsehood, the same way that they were amplifying leading up to the election that Black men were going to be voting in overwhelming numbers to Trump. Right. They just didn't. Many people stayed home, so that's one. And so those rumors have been debunked. But what has not been debunked is how people take that in. And so, you know, you go on your feeds and you have people sipping coffee going, "I'm not involved." And it's like, well, you better be involved, which is why I wanted to have you on, because what is happening is just a hop, skip, and a jump from it happening to everybody else. What we're seeing, folks are like, "Yeah, they're not coming after me." Oh, hell yeah, they are. This is just the start. You know, once we get rid of Alex, you know, and his crew, then they can look at me and go, "Yo, weren't you and Alex homies?" Yeah, so there was seven of y'all or eight of y'all, but now there's only two left because we got rid of him and his folks. So now you're by yourself, and now we can do what we want, and we don't have to worry about you having potential backup. That's one thing. Second, you mentioned many people came from repressive countries. So there was already an understanding of how things were happening and going to happen, right? Which is why I wanted to have folks like you and others on to kind of give us an idea, like, what was it like in El Salvador? What was going on in places like Chile? These dictatorships didn't happen naturally. These were installed by the U.S., you know? And so we're seeing the type of things that entire populations had to deal with. Now it's on our front door, and we don't have any education about it. We don't know what the warning signs are. We don't know anything. And I'll close with this. Talking with the folks that I know from Chile, Rebel Diaz and all those guys, one of the things that they said, that under the Pinochet dictatorship, is that business went on as usual while people were being disappeared. And so you didn't really know, but you knew. You kind of heard stuff, but then you didn't hear stuff. And I swear to God, that's happening now. People are disappearing, and we're on TikTok doing dances and being like, "What happened to Alex?" And then it's kind of like, "Oh, maybe he moved, or maybe he didn't." And so then you wake up one day and found out, man, thousands of people have been deported into another place. And then lastly, we have the same organizations, private prisons, controlling all these prisons from around the world. So we better be concerned, is my conclusion on that.
No. We have to see the biggest enemy is buying this nonsense, you know, that we're all going to be attacked by an MS-13 individual, right? Where most of us have never met one of them, right? But it's the fear that's been instilled in our communities that many African-Americans as well as white folks, they're saying, oh, they're criminals. Yeah, we should deport them. And they sign off on it, not knowing that, you know, like in this over 250 folks that were deported to El Salvador, to a prison it's paying now to have individuals over there incarcerated, right? There was folks that were not gang involved. There were folks that were forced to sign a document that said they were from the Tren de Aragua gang, right? Mm. They had 8 women that were going to be sent as well, that the government in El Salvador said, no, we're not gonna accept women. This is a men's prison, right? There was somebody else from Nicaragua, right, that was being sent, that said, I'm from Nicaragua, I'm not from Venezuela, or, right, or El Salvador, and he was turned around and brought back, and he was talking about witnessing all these things that were happening with the government. So the biggest thing is that, you know, that's how people are being disappeared, and it's been happening. But once you demonize and criminalize the population, especially immigrant youth and gang members that now are labeled in a blanket statement as criminals, as gang members, yeah, people sign off on it, not understanding that each of those individuals needed to have their court hearing in immigration heard. Many of them were not gang involved. Accusations are accusations. There is a due process over here that was respected in the United States that now is being violated. All those individuals had a chance to submit their application for asylum, right? And then the phase will be, you prove it, and then you get deported. But no, total violation of the Constitution, but just getting of these folks, many of them were in the process of the court hearings. So they took them before the judge even decided on their cases, right? Yeah. So this is what we're talking about. And you don't have to go far, just the thought of sending these people to Guantanamo, right? You know, it's an alert, it's a message that they're gonna come after us. And now cutting our voice, right, as you mentioned, right? Cutting our right to speak up against injustices around the world. Now you have the brother Muhammad Khalil that spoke up against what's going on with his people in Palestine. You know, and now he went and they jacked him, they arrested him, and they're trying to make link him to Hamas and all this other stuff, right? Because they want to criminalize any activist as well that's speaking up against this administration. Right. So, you know, and this is a brother that initially they said, oh, he was on a U visa. He was a permanent resident. He is a permanent resident, but they want to take it away. They want to snatch that. And that's like, It made me step back a little because I'm in the same boat, right? I'm in the same boat. So it's like, it's like, wow, man, how do I protect myself? How do I protect my family? If I've been speaking now, how do I do that when I know what happened to Muhammad Khalil could happen to me as well, right? And that's when we start saying, you know what, man, we got to come up and say, you know what? Once before, when injustice happened, the United States citizens of this country stepped forward and supported us. Once they understood the cruelty of what the Germans were doing over there, right? The cruelties of what happens, that's when we need the U.S. citizens in the United States to step up and defend us. And that's what we got to be talking about. We got to defend the Constitution of this country as it is right now and protect those rights that we have and those rights that we should have and other people, the LGBTQ women's rights that were not part of the Constitution that were put in there. Those rights are being stripped away. And when you say You hold on and you get rid of all the gang members. Well, who's next? You know, right now it's MS-13, Tren de Aragua. You know, next is 18th Street. Next is the Crips and the Bloods. They have transnational chapters, right? So they can also be labeled terrorist organizations. And the California gang database only arrests people, and it's up to a police officer to designate you a gang member or not. And they're taking that information, and that's how they're going after our people, right?
You know, I was in L.A., I want to say about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, when they were floating the idea around of declaring any of the gangs terrorist organizations. And at that time, they were focusing on Bloods and Crips, you know. And they're doing that now, you know. I mean, they're arresting people en masse. You know, they're putting a label on them. In the case of the black gangs, they're saying, oh, you know, they were extorting. They were doing all these things with the brown gang, with the quote-unquote on all that. They have a whole other ball of wax. Their cartel, their MS-13, their this, that, and the third. It's still all coming from the same source, right? But in the backdrop, people who storm the White House and are doing militias and who are training and doing, all those folks are being pardoned and healed as heroes. And so, you know, that's, to me, things, you know, working simultaneously. But if you're not connected to other communities, you just see your own. And then you kind of hear these rumors. Well, maybe they was extorting. Maybe they were doing wrong. Well, maybe they were in here. Maybe they were gangs, you know, from Venezuela. Also, we want to remind people, like, the face of that, just the Venezuelan thing, when you go to Chicago, many people don't realize those Venezuelans are about my complexion. They're brown skin. They're coastal Venezuelans, you know. And again, very deliberately, they don't show that as the face. They show folks who will be brown like you. So we don't get the idea like, oh, so in other words, if you're in Chicago, they might pick me up, you know, and say, you're part of this. It's like, no, I'm from Chicago. Yeah, okay, whatever. You get in the plane and figure it out once you get there. And so all this is just a pretense. And I think testing the waters and then figuring out what works best to start picking up people en masse, you know, and using these rules and laws. And, you know, at this point, it's like if you live in a certain neighborhood, we can just categorize you and say that you are part of the gang or whatever organization that they want to demonize. And we're also forgetting that they can now start demonizing nonprofits and saying these nonprofits are terrorist organizations. Didn't they just pass that law?
Yeah.
So none of us are safe. I want to ask you a question, Alex Sanchez, our guest from Homies Unidos. What is happening to folks once they get to these prison camps in El Salvador? What is going on there? I think people think they're getting due process. You obviously said they're not. So what is happening once they get off this plane?
So what's happening, it's something that's been happening since March 2022. Okay. There was and this is something that's online, Insight Crime and Faro, right? They've done real thorough investigations in regards to the President Bukele from El Salvador having make deals with some of the leadership in the gangs in El Salvador. Reduction of homicides went substantially down during the first 2 years of his presidency, making him look like the best president they ever had. So what happened is that once the investigation started linking him with this deal that he was swearing he wasn't making like the other governments beforehand, he tried to break away from that deal, understanding that there was going to be a reaction by the gangs. And that's when what happened in March 2022, where there was around 81 or 87 people that were killed in the weekend, you know, due to the reaction of the government and breaking from that deal. So by this time, though, the government already had a plan. By this time already, he started implementing this state, what's called a state of exception, which is basically a state of emergency, you know, certain civil and human rights are taken away from individuals during this period. It only supposed to last a month and get renewed by Congress every month. But since March 2022, it's been renewed every month continuously until today. So in the process of that, within a month or 2 months, he built the biggest prison in the continent. He built the prison called SECOD, that stands for the Center of Confinement Against Terrorism, right? And in the Spanish acronyms. And it holds 40,000. That makes it the biggest prison in the continent. And nobody was like, why are you building the biggest prison in the continent? Right?
In El Salvador.
And El Salvador, which is one of the smallest countries in the continent. Right? And he's gone after over 85,000 people that have been arrested by the state of exception decrees that were implemented that makes it against the law for someone to be part of a gang or to be associated with the gang or even to be blamed. You're a gang member, you get sentenced to a minimum of 20 years in prison, right? So you got all these people that started getting arrested. There was a motivation factor of providing monetary compensation to those that turn in the gang member. So everybody was turning in everybody, right? So you had like, I'll tell you a story real quick. I talked to a mother that was arrested with her two daughters in El Salvador because one of the daughter's husband was fighting a custody battle and he wanted the child. He had connections to Nuevas Ideas, right? And what he threatened was like, if you don't give me my daughter, stop fighting it, I'm gonna turn you in. So that's exactly what he did. So he just went over there, told the government, hey, they're collecting extortion money. So they're wow. The ones that received extortion money. They went, arrested all three of them. They were held for over 7 months in a prison called La Panteos, which is a women's, they turned it into half of it into a women's prison and the other one into a man's prison. And they were there for 7 months trying to tell them, no, we're not have any association with the gang. The mother had two strokes while she was in there. One of the daughters were severely beaten many times because she will protest her mom's condition. She was in a cell in front of her mother's cell, right? And the other one was raped inside the prison. I'm not sure by the guards or by the inmates. But in any case, people and hordes went over there and protested their detention, and eventually they were let out, right? Over 30% of the people arrested right now are innocent. That's based on Cristosal, a human rights organization in El Salvador that's monitoring a lot of this stuff. Over one third of the people, that means that 30,000 people in prison right now, in all the prisons, right, are innocent. Right. So anybody gets charged, man, you can go down there and I can point you out, man, and say, hey, he's a gang. They'll pick you up and they'll figure out if you're a U.S. citizen later.
What's the connection with this super prison in the U.S. in terms of is it backed by the GO, group that's here, the private prison industry that's here? Did they cut a deal with Trump? Obviously the deal was cut with Trump because now they're accepting all this stuff. So what's happening? Is money being exchanged? What's the deal?
Well, right now, they have the conditions inside of those gangs, have it's gruesome. It's the worst place a human.
You mean inside the prison?
Inside that prison, because yeah. You don't have a mattress, they're metal, three or four beds. You don't get blankets. You just have a boxer, and that's how you sleep all day and night, right? They only take you out just to do some prayer, some yoga, and for half an hour and back in. I'm not sure who built it, but I think it was home built by El Salvador. But definitely, they're looking at the strategy of some of the prisons here in the United States that were using labor, prison labor, to basically kind of sustain it, right?
Oh, wow.
So that, you know, they're using that in the other prisons where they have people now coming out and working either the streets or cleaning or the walls or whatnot, or destroying tombs that belong to gang members, right? You know, they have some of the folks working now. But the relationship right now that happened was after Marco Rubio went down to El Salvador. And he was offered by the Salvadoran government that he would take anyone from any country that the country will not accept their deported individual. Right, so that became the agreement, and that's why Venezuelan folks were sent down to El Salvador. Each head, they're paying $9 million for each individual that they hold for 1 year. Right, so it's a monetary compensation that the Salvadoran government is getting, and it's
anybody could be $9 million a year.
Per individual.
So I'm just trying to figure this out, Alex Sanchez, because as this is happening, we're watching, you know, Elon Musk and his crew fire everybody, collapse departments, close down these things and say, this is government waste and that they're saving all this money, right? So I don't know, you know, I'm not an economist. I have some family that has worked in the federal government. You know, maybe you have too. But none of my family members came close to even making $1 million, you know, in their entire lifetime of working for these, you know, for the federal government, much less a year. So you fire somebody and collapse a whole department, say the Department of Education, where maybe somebody might be making 70,000 or 80,000, right? And you've saved us money, as we're seeing you send thousands of people at $9 million a clip, you know, and they're staying there for 20 years or just 1 year? How long are they staying
there? Right now, basically, from my understanding, is that their agreement, the contract, is for 1 year, right? So that whatever process they need to go through, you know, then the government, the U.S. government, will decide what happens next. So we don't know if these individuals are going to be held indefinitely. We don't know if these individuals are going to have continued their immigration process that they already had pending in the United States. We don't know if that's going to continue in those prisons, right? But one thing we know is that they have a system already that they don't let no one come in. Right, if you got court hearings, nobody goes out of their prison. They're it's all through monitor, right?
Hey guys, come on!
I got my dogs over here going crazy too, man. They're mad. So, basically, you know, we don't know. Those are questions that they have not answered yet in regards to what's going to happen. We don't know if the Venezuelan government is going to respond, but the Venezuelan government already checked in and said that many, if not all, of those people are not gang members, right? You know, taking at face value, I don't know, right? But what we do know is that at least one of the individuals that was there had a tattoo of Real Madrid, which is a soccer team in,
right?
You know, that they labeled a gang tattoo. So who are these individuals in the United States labeling a tattoo, a gang tattoo, and then these people end up suffering, you know, being deported with a group of others that may be or may not be gang members to a prison where they're going to be tortured, right? Because that's what happens there. People are tortured. It's a psychological and physical torture. Nobody has access to you. You don't have access to a phone. All of these people that were deported have not been able to call their families and let them know how they're doing. All of these people down there have not had access to proper medical care. You know, all of this, all the interviews you see, and there's been, there's this president of El Salvador has been showcasing the prison by bringing in YouTubers, bringing in all these other folks to videotape, and you have all these gang members just bald, you know, with tattoos, with their arms crossed, and they're quiet. When in any other interview, they would have been throwing their gang signs or speaking out, like what's happening with them. I can just imagine the torture that they will suffer, and they will tell somebody, hey, man, we're being tortured. We're not being fed. What will happen to them when there's already been 250 people that have died inside? Right? That the government is, it's the autopsy results say that they're died of natural causes, when independent, you know, autopsies have been conducted. They show the bruises and signs of torture, right? So we know damn well what's happening to our people.
Do you connect the type of mass displacement, incarceration, and subsequent death that's happening in El Salvador with what was going on simultaneously in places like the Philippines under Duarte? What we've seen going on in India under, you know, that guy there, Modi, what we even saw for a period of time until the election, what was going on. But they had a whole program for the favelas in Brazil. It seemed like all these people were coming from the same cloth of dictatorship, backed by the U.S., in cahoots with it, and, you know, exercising removal and incarceration type of tactics in mass. We don't follow the politics of what's going on in other countries, so it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. But, you know, as you said, human rights watchers were like, this is not right. I mean, you know, tens of thousands of people were killed in the Philippines and we haven't even blinked an eye. You know what I mean? But under Duarte, and he was being embraced, you know, by this, you know, this current president, like, he's doing a good thing. You know, these are our partners. To me, that should be alarming, because again, it's just now the tide is turning. It's getting ready to come to our doorsteps, you know, now that it's been perfected everywhere else.
They test yeah. how strong human rights organizations are to interfere in government's autonomy to dictate what they want to do with their own people, right? And in El Salvador, this happened. You know, we have Amnesty International, Cristo Sad, you know, Human Rights Watch, right, and several other human rights organizations that have been criticized, demonized, and persecuted already. Inside Crime and Faro newspapers, online newspapers, have been persecuted as well by this president of El Salvador, right? But this is the catch, right? He still maintains over 85% approval ratings by society in El Salvador,
really? Right?
It's reducing, but he still maintains this high. Why is this, right? And this is where it becomes controversial, right? And sometimes people want to attack me like, oh, you just defend the criminals, right? The fact is that El Salvador had a pass during the war, and then after the war, you know, where 70,000 people died, many were displaced and tortured and disappeared, right? In cahoots with the United States, right? That trained them how to torture people, right? The gangs, once they started evolutionizing and adapting to that culture of El Salvador, you know, were targeted by death squads in 1994. I was down there. I have been deported. So when the death squads came out to eradicate the gang problem, not because the government wanted to do something right for society by reducing crime, it was because they wanted to be part of what had happened with NAFTA, the National Free Trade Agreement. So there was talks about the Central American Free Trade Agreement, right? That they wanted, and the investors said, you're too violent. So they brought in their guns, again, that they had used during the war, now to use against the gang members that they so-called, right? So you started gang members being attacked by these death squads and executed, killed, shot in the back of the head, naked, hanging from poles, right? And that was their MO, right? Mm. So for the first time in any gang culture, right, the enemy did not look the same anymore.
Mm.
For the first time, the enemy could be anyone, right? And law enforcement also. So for gangs in Los Angeles and elsewhere, you know, they don't really target, you know, the civilian population. They target each other because they're destroying each other. There's a psychology behind all of that, of destroying oneself, right? But that changed in El Salvador when the death squads came in the picture to eradicate the gang problem, right? And so the gangs responded by targeting individuals that they thought were the ones that were forming gangs. And that created what became this high level intensity of violence, right? So people in El Salvador has not had a moment of peace, whether it's because of the civil war in El Salvador, it was because of the deportation of the gang culture that was created here in the U.S., right?
Right.
They haven't had a moment to breathe. So when this president comes and then jacks up all of these people, most of them saying, damn, I can go out now without fear of being taxed or killed. And that's something good, right? But what they don't realize is that for many years, the government were the ones that empowered the gangs. The government were the ones that provided funding for to use gangs as their recruitment tool or during election period, right?
So right.
They led the people died in our country. The governments and no parties, to be exact. They let our people die. And now here comes the president that also had a deal with the gangs, but he wanted to be the cool dictator, right?
Mm.
And he comes in and doesn't want to be discovered because he has two ministers of the prison system already labeled members of the International Criminal Organization by the United States Treasury Department.
Wow.
This deal right now, they have been trying to extradite over 15 gang members, and they wanted, under the Biden administration, to extradite it to know what was the deals that the president of El Salvador had made with the gangs violating some international laws or whatnot, right? Because there was many crimes committed here as well behind what was going on in El Salvador. So what's happening now is that by El Salvador government agreeing and brokering a deal with the United States, that investigation is going away.
That was the deal that was cut.
That investigation.
So Trump is like, take our deportees.
Yeah, he'll pardon him.
He's being pardoned.
You know, but the society overall, I'm telling you, man, my family down there, they're happy that, you know, that they can breathe. And I understand it completely, right? But, you know, it's not until they have a family member be part of the 30% of innocent people in there that they realize the impact that this had. You know, people from Suchitoto that were organizing against the privatization of water are under attack. People from other that were part of other labor movements now are under attack. And all you have to do to get them arrested is say that they have an association with the gang. So now it's become a tool for anyone standing up against the government to be incarcerated. Anyone standing up to talk about human rights can be incarcerated, and they'll use illicit associations as a charge.
We're going to stop our interview with Alex Sanchez right here. We have a lot more to talk about. We will take up the conversation about the pipeline to mass deportations tomorrow. Again, we've been talking with Alex Sanchez from Homies Unidos down in Los Angeles. We will see you tomorrow where we pick up the conversation on Hard Knock Radio.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning. It's ice cold storming. The frosting rags frozen over the stove, boiling water for the coffee while the baby sister's crying. Needless to say, the baby always wakes the sirens. Patrolling all the neighborhoods, flooded with the migrants. Stepping over borders and fences like a giant, with jobs on consignment for a low wage. No way one can work away the whole day with no pay. But what you see and what they don't say is two different things. Picture getting chased by high beams, screaming for your ID, sweating to the oldies. The master's right behind me.
Corazón. Smash the borders abajo con la migra. Tenemos
corazón.
Olvídate, mano, de ser como todos. Let it shine.
Corazón.
Smash the borders abajo con la migra. Tenemos
corazón.
Olvídate, mano, de ser como todos. Let it shine.
Now in the morning I make coffee with some cinnamon. Drive by like 50 Cent, I'm seeing many men. But they ain't wishing for death and destruction. They're the guys who break backs doing construction. The ditch diggers, asphalt pavers, minute men, itch triggers and higher landscapers. Looking just like the kid who asked me for work. Waving down my hoopty cause I wear a nice shirt. Clean shoes, iron dickies and gel on my head. All I got is my lunch, but I'm willing to share. No sé qué decirle, manito, que tenga buen día. Que Dios les bendiga a todos sus familias.
Smash the borders abajo con la migra. Tenemos
corazón.
Olvídate, mano, de ser como todos. Let it shine.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coach. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Greetings, I'm Ansa Craigland.
And I'm Winston Watson.
And I'm Donald Clark.
And we are The Meditation.
We are listening to Community Radio.
KBOO
90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Dig it.
This is Bird Note. This is the song of a white-crowned sparrow. Some describe it as, see me, pretty, pretty me. The white-crowned sparrow pours out its song over and over on spring and summer days, and even on moonlit nights. The buzzy song seems to float on the air in much of the western United States. At first, you might think the sparrow is just another little brown bird, but the elegant black and white stripes on its head make this bird stand out. Now here's a curious thing. Just as people in different regions may have different dialects, white crowns have different songs. Here's a white crown from Washington State. And now, another, 300 miles away in Oregon. Quite a difference, don't you think? Once more, one. And now the other. Regional dialects arise because young white-crowned sparrows may learn their song from birds other than their parents. Slight variations get copied until all the birds in that territory are singing the new version of the song. It's like the old game of telephone. The song changes bit by bit as it moves along. Listen to more dialects at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at BirdNote Radio.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Ray Lynn, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
The thrills continue here on KBOO as the Monday Sampler.